Starting in 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone.
That was very sad.
I apologize.
Are we including this? Are we including this?
Probably. Who knows? I'll decide.
Nice.
Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. My name is Sunidhi.
That was much better. I'm Tanvi.
And this is Anika.
I was like, hello, who's Tanvi, next?
Tanvi just went compliment. Like, you know, that was like better, I guess.
Nice.
That's my entire personality. Just like, nice.
That's the entire episode, just nice.
I want to bring to notice, we all reference memes in these episodes, but you have to know we record them like 5 weeks before we post it.
Yes. So in case if we're like very outdated, we apologize. At the time of recording, we're on spot.
But we're also usually late to every like trend.
Tanvi.
And party. But,
Tanvi, are you projecting
this
here?
We're going to be especially late. Yes, I'm definitely projecting. Like, I get to know about memes and stuff 2 months after they're relevant.
Yeah, we had to explain to you who Addison Rae is.
We know.
That's something.
Yesterday night, they're talking about Addison Rae, and I was like, who?
Whom's
like, she doesn't know Addison Rae. How? Everyone. Okay, that's...
Most Koreans and Asians probably
right
know.
This is probably like the first segment that we have. It's called Crap.
You made it sound so mundane. You took all the
it's
fun out of it.
Crap. That's like a nursery school teacher. That's
see,
what
now,
that's like a kindergarten
here,
teacher going, it's called Crap.
As the names, like, you know, just like the names that start with A, you're open to interpret whatever the A means. But initially, the, you know, CRAP is an acronym for creepy readings for dash people. So you want to be adventurous, annoying, acoustic, whatever.
Acoustic people. That makes sense.
Yes.
We cater to all people as long as you have the first alphabet involved in that adjective.
Average people, amazing people, abhorrent people, like
above
whatever,
and beyond,
you know, like
people.
Self-love skill. Yeah.
So if you hate yourself that day.
Asinine people with two S's, because this ass is fantastic. Sorry, continue.
Another full, for Addison Rae people, like, it's fine. You can go with whatever you like.
Yeah, exactly. So if you hate yourself that day, go all out. If you love yourself, go all out. And if you just want to be, you know, ambidextrous that day, even though you're not, go for it.
Yes. You want to be a fangirl?
I really
then,
wanted to be ambidextrous.
Yeah. I still want to be ambidextrous, but I can't use my left hand for shit.
You can barely use your right hand.
Just, guys, I think I've already said this before. I think I've already said this before. Wait, sorry, my class is still going on. Let me just mute it. But I think I've said this before, but I will say it again. These two just say stuff for the sake of saying stuff. If they're just off their rocker half the time, so just leave them.
Yeah, no shit, Sherlock. Obviously.
Yes.
Nuts. Anybody who's spoken to me for more than 5 minutes in a somewhat not professional setting knows that.
Even in a professional setting, I feel like you just talk your...
Have you been in a professional setting?
Yes. I think I can hide it a little bit better.
Yeah.
Can you though? Can you?
Yeah.
Can you really...
I think I can. I might be wrong again. What do I know?
What do I? I know very few things. I understand very few.
What was
things.
That frog painting you made for her?
Yeah,
what did it say?
One. I understand very few things.
Yeah, perfect. That was perfect. We need to post that on the story.
I haven't painted it yet,
but
I have the outline. Oh my god, yeah, I'll post it once I'm done. Okay, so today's episode is the first rendition of Crap. We started with, you know, maybe an urban legends kind of vibe, but I went down a rabbit hole on creepypasta, and now it's just creepy readings, so enjoy. 100% candid. So, okay, urban legends are legends that are urban. That's my definition for the day.
Dramatic.
You can quote me if you'd like.
Cue dramatic clapping.
Yes. Yay! Like, okay, so the first one I found is Beijing's Ghost Bus.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just getting into it. I have no segue for this. Let's go.
So, we never have good segues.
Like so many urban legends, this one begins on a dark and stormy night. While there are more than a few variations of this story, like what the number route was, the story generally goes like this. A bus is traveling late at night, around midnight, and it's the last one of the evening. Two men flag down the bus, and even though the driver is reluctant to pick them up since they're not at a stop, he goes ahead and lets them on anyway. So far, so good. But it turns out, it's actually three men. Two are holding up another one who appears to be in rough shape. It turns out that all three of them are extraordinarily pale and wearing some garb from the Qing, I think it's King, but like whatever, I'm sorry if I mispronounced it, dynasty, which was somewhere from like 1600s to 1900s. The bus driver apparently explains it away by claiming that they are three actors who didn't have the time to change after work. Like, it's a decently normal explanation for why they'd be wearing such old-timey clothes, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, as the bus slowly empties out, it gets down to a young man and an elderly person, which has been both a man or a woman, depending on who's telling the story. It's just an elderly person. Out of nowhere, the older person picks a fight with the young man, claiming that he stole his wallet and forcing him to get off at the next stop to go to the police. Upon disembarking, they tell the young man that the fight was a ruse to help them get off the bus. Apparently, the three men that had gotten on the bus hadn't been touching the ground. So, there's also some versions that say that the men didn't have legs at all. Oh. The two go to the police and report the alleged spirits, but they get ridiculed. However, the next morning, they find that the bus never really completed its route. Some versions of the story say that the bus was never found, but the more popular is that the bus was found days later with three severely decomposed bodies inside.
Bruh.
Da-da-da.
That is
not too
wild.
Creepy, but imagine being on that bus.
Exactly.
Like, imagine being on a bus, like, damn. Oh, that would be terrifying.
See, the problem is now whenever I think of like missing transport or missing vehicles, I think of the Malaysian airline. Like,
oh my god, that is
the number. That's the first thing that pops into my mind, which is very sad. But
it's really sad, but it's terrifying. Like, where the hell did it go?
Exactly.
Honestly.
Have you?
I saw this video by like
you all
have this
seen
channel
the route of the bus. Like, I saw not the bus, the route of the plane. Like, the way the plane was just going all over Earth.
Exactly, yeah. I remember, like, I watched this video by, like, this guy named Let Me Know. He makes good, like, really good quality videos, and he did
I think I've seen the same one. Yeah.
Yeah, a great cover of this one, and it was wild. Like, the way the craft was, like, everywhere. But, yeah, freaky stuff.
Really freaky stuff. Okay, so, at the risk of wasting time, let's move on to the next one. And I really hope you're listening
waste
to
time.
This after 11 p.m. for the nightmares. So, Nidhi, don't be an ass.
That's my role. Do not
usurp
my role.
Please, Tanvi will have no originality if you go ahead and take this from her.
Does she?
My thing is being a troll. Don't take away the one thing I bring to the table.
Okay, so the next one is a very, like, it's a story on creepypasta, and this is from a very common urban legend that I'm sure almost everyone would have heard. It's about the Black Eyed Children.
Oh,
yay.
God. Okay.
This is so terrifying.
I haven't actually heard this.
You haven't heard? Okay, so I'll give you a bit of a background, I guess. it's about, like, these kids. Obviously, this happens in the US because so much like creepy stuff just happens
really
in the
what
US.
Goes on in the US.
I don't know. Yeah, a lot of stuff goes on in the US. So it starts off like there's people who are usually alone, like adults at night. And you know how adults are like nicer to kids because, you know, they want to protect them and they don't want, you know, bad stuff to happen to them. And kids are associated with like innocence and, you know, just nice things in general. Tanvi would disagree, but bear with me.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I could feel her disagreeing.
Okay, let's go ahead and say this.
Not
Tanvi,
my experience, but go off, I guess.
Tanvi, you have to save either a young child who's falling off a building or an older person. Who would you be more likely to go and save?
Okay, here's the thing. I'd let both of them die, but if I had to, right? If I had to save somebody, I'd save the child because the old person's already lived their life. Like, there's no opportunity cost there.
There's a chance that the older person can help themselves, right? Like, you always have that. But kids are always seen as, you know, like someone you need to be nice to, someone you need to help. So this kind of works on...
Unfortunately.
Oh my God. This kind of works on, like, exploiting that. It says that there would be kids that you'd go try to help, or, you know, they just come up at your door at midnight asking, you know, to call their parents or something. But you look into their eyes... and they're like pitch black, and a lot of the people are never seen again. So that's all I'm going to leave you with, and let's start the story.
I'm telling you, kids are scary. It's just, kids are just scary.
Okay, so this one, the title is particularly scary. It's called Come Play With Me. Tanvi, don't, please don't. But in a scary scenario, it's terrifying.
No, I wasn't gonna say anything. Yeah,
okay,
I wasn't
so let's go.
Say anything.
Stepping through the doorway, I had to hold up a hand to cover my eyes. The sun was incredibly bright and there wasn't a single cloud in the sky. This had given me the sad delusion that there would be some sort of semblance of warmth to be had, but the bitter cold air shattered the happy thought. I wrapped my coat tighter around me, doing the top button up, which I always hated to do. It brought on feelings of claustrophobia, probably linked to the fact that it constricted my neck ever so slightly. Always good for a horror story, isn't it? You're getting choked as you're walking out.
I mean, I enjoy that.
Erotic asphyxiation. I'm just going to leave it there.
Erotic. Actually, no, this is not... It's not... Yeah, okay, let's just continue. My shoes hit the tarmac and I began to walk out into the playground. A line of excitable children followed me out before dispersing among the play equipment. Some sat in a small group on the circular benches, loudly talking about political power within the class. A smile crept over my face. Who knew 11-year-olds could discuss things in a way to make them sound like teenagers? Other classes were emerging, and now a few more teachers were there to help keep watch. Jenny caught my eye and smiled, and I gave her a small nod in reply. Soon, the playground was swarmed with children, running around, playing games, excitedly discussing television shows and video games which they were playing. Plenty felt the need to come and share the information with me, and I went along with this, laughing and smiling. Although they could be the cause of a few accidents, the playground in a primary school often felt like one of the happiest places to be. I was content and obviously alert to any potential dangers. That's when I noticed her. There was a small girl, a younger age than I taught, maybe 6 or 7 years old from her build, but she was slumped in a corner next to a fence, hugging her knees to her chest. She wasn't wearing a coat, nor was she wearing the school jumper with our logo. She was sat on the concrete, huddled in the shadow, her dark hair cascading over her face as she looked down. She must have been freezing. I assume she had some sort of argument with a friend and was away from the others, either sulking or genuinely upset. Either way, I had to console her to send her back inside to get her coat. I walked over to her and squatted down, getting to the same level as her to make sure she didn't feel threatened.
Hey there, are you okay?
She shook her head, shaking some hair loose from her shoulder so that it covered even more of her face.
What happened?
Silence. It was at this point that I felt uncomfortable. I had no idea why. I had conversations like these a dozen times a day. Some children felt like talking, some needed consoling, some just needed space, and we gave them that. They usually spoke when they were ready. This situation though, something about it had me on edge to the point that I could actually feel the adrenaline kick of a flight or fight response. Aren't you cold? Another shaking of the head, then a meek voice came forth from the mass of hair.
I never get cold.
Why? You really killed the vibe there.
I'm sorry.
Why?
I don't know. I can't handle serious situations. Anyways, some of us never grow out of that bravado, but children almost always responded like that. They were never too cold or tired or anything else that could be perceived as weakness, at least not when asked. I respect that. Yes, yes.
Handa's like, vulnerability. Oh, gross.
Disgusting.
Well, I think we need to get you inside or get your coat. At least get your jumper.
No, the voice is no longer meek. It was commanding and the head shifted slightly so that it raised more towards me, revealing her face. I tried my best not to, but I recoiled slightly. In this light, the shadow of the fence, her eyes appeared entirely black. No iris, no sclera... what am I saying? Sclera, right? Yes, thank you. I'm so sorry. Just pure black ovals reflecting my own face. She sighed gently and her eyes closed again. I want to play. Well, I began slowing my breathing and keeping the momentary fear out of my voice. You can play after we get your jumper.
Will you play with me?
Sure.
She tilted her head back and now the hair was falling away as her eyes snapped open suddenly. Again, those eyes, the pure black pools reflecting my own concerned face.
We have to play. You have to play with me.
I had stood up and taken a few steps back. She was shaking now, but it didn't seem to be shivering. There was no fear and nothing about her that suggested she was cold. It literally looked like she was shaking in anger. Her blank, expressionless face had contorted into one of anger, her eyes narrowing and her lips pulling back until her teeth were bared. I had stumbled back a few more steps and then had frozen. I felt simultaneously terrified and embarrassed. I was a senior teacher in a playground full of children and other staff and was retreating in horror from one infant. I opened my mouth to speak and then the bell went, the ringing which symbolized that it was the end of playtime. The anger vanished from her face and her eyes closed again as the children rushed around me, between us, and none of them stopping to look at her as she rose from the ground. I found my feet and walked towards where my own class was lining up, and my eyes locked on her as she stood upright and once more I was shown the darkness behind her eyelids. Her lips pulled up into a smile that chilled me even more than anything I had encountered in my teaching career. Lost in the throng of running children, I lost sight of her. Once she was out of my sight, it was easy to dismiss what I had seen as just a trick of the light, my own senses trick causing me to become afraid, which in turn caused my senses to let me down again. I never saw that girl again. Never noticed her so I could confirm or disprove what I had seen, and I moved schools not long after that, transferring somewhere closer to home. I had begun to put it out of my head, dismiss it entirely. Then I stumbled upon a newspaper article, one which spoke of a black-eyed girl who had been frequently seen in Staffordshire. Looking into it, I found hundreds of accounts of those who had witnessed the black-eyed children, all describing the same sense of fear, dread, and foreboding which accompanied them in the anger the children displayed when it was discovered that they were anything but normal. Apparently, most of these involved black-eyed children asking to come into your home, saying they need help, or coming up to your car begging for a ride. I have no idea what happens if you allow them in, and the teacher and me would find it difficult to turn them away. All I would say is, look into their eyes before saying yes.
Jeez.
The only part which terrifies me is like a kid shaking in anger, like, bro.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck?
Dude, you haven't met my sister. Haven't met my sister.
I mean, I understand.
I hope I meet her soon.
You've heard my sister. You haven't met her.
Not yet. We'll see her soon. Dun, dun, dun.
That is odd. That is threatening.
That is ominous. Very ominous.
It's a vibe we're going for here. Also, good for us, we're recording this in the morning, so
yeah,
it's not,
I swear, it's really difficult to get like spooked from this. It's just
so,
like, ooh.
Why do you think I insisted we record this at 11:30?
You are boring, and I despise you. You know,
as you
way,
should.
I'm kind of hungry.
As
can I go get a snack, please?
Yes, why not?
Oh my god, you feel hunger? Okay, yeah, go ahead, please.
I mean, if you guys want, you can continue, but it'll just take me like 2 minutes. I'm just getting a small snack.
Go,
yeah,
for
we'll
it, go for it. Tanvi and I will entertain everyone else.
Yeah.
That sounds weird.
Don't pause recording.
No. Never. Okay, now I don't know what to talk about.
One eternity later.
Yeah, that's
what
everybody said.
I return.
That's literally what everybody said.
Yeah, like, I mean, you need to chew, right? So the hair won't help.
What?
Yeah, but also teeth will be painful.
Huh? Not that painful. Like, you get your power in your, like, the teeth get, like, the power of, like, cutting and chewing from the jaw and, like, you know.
What?
No, but they are still pointy and jagged.
Not really.
You realize that.
Right? You know what?
Yeah, they are.
This will be a fun surprise in a few weeks for me to listen to. I don't know what the fuck just happened.
Oh, yeah, it will be. Oh, yeah, it will be. And I would advise against putting this in the podcast.
Yeah, please don't. Please don't. Okay, so for the next one, it's called I'm Downstairs, and I'm thinking I'm going to read this like an old-timey narrator.
Yes.
Let's go. And this is like a very basic, like everyone's heard this story at some point of their life, somewhere, whether it's a stupid Insta post or like you're going through Reddit or you're listening to scary stories around a campfire.
Let me surprise you. Let me surprise you. Yes. Being out of the loop.
Okay, so let's go. The clock struck midnight. I was on my laptop in my bedroom, browsing through YouTube videos. I can't do this.
Why? Girl.
Sorry, like, I'm trying to do a deeper voice, which is like a narrator thing, but it's just, okay, bye. Let's go. Normal voice.
Suddenly, the clock just struck midnight.
Yes.
Anika finally hits puberty.
We will continue now. The clock struck midnight. I was on my laptop in my bedroom, browsing through YouTube videos. However, my browsing stopped when my phone vibrated. I saw that I received a text message from my friend, Ben.
Hey man, I'm outside by the back door. Can you let me in?
I knew he was lying. For the past few weekends, he had been messing with me. One weekend, he told me he was parked in my cul-de-sac, which in reality was his bedroom. The following weekend, he told me he was coming over to hang out. When I came outside to greet him in his car, he floated out of my neighborhood. I wasn't going to let him get me this time. I sent a reply back again. I know you're just messing with me. See, this is like peak Tanvi. I know she would do this.
Yeah, I was just about to say, this is something I would do.
Hi, I'm outside.
I might be Ben.
No, I'm not psych.
Yeah, I'm outside your house. And then you go there and I'm like, just kidding.
Alternatively, you get your car all the way here. I come to greet you and you floor it. Like, no, not today.
Just say, uh-uh.
Okay.
Not today, but
Anika just comes out with open arms. She's like, nope, fuck you.
Yeah.
Nope, don't need this today. Okay, so I know you're just messing with me again, I replied. He immediately texted back.
No, I'm being serious this time. I'm by the back door.
Nice try. I know you're not there. I placed my phone down and continued my search. About a minute later, my phone vibrated again.
I'm downstairs.
Ben, you can't troll me on 3 weekends in a row. However, I'll give you an A for the effort. I placed my phone down again. I wasn't going to play his little game. As I was about to continue my search, I started to hear something from the deafening silence of my dark house. I faced the doorway and behind me, I faced the doorway behind me and I listened closely. It sounded like footsteps, silent footsteps walking around downstairs. It was nerve-wracking. I just couldn't believe it. Was my mind tricking me or was Ben actually in my house? I grabbed my phone. Are you joking with me, man? I continued to listen as my phone vibrated again.
No, I told you I was downstairs, but you didn't believe me.
I was very relieved that it was him, but I was pissed off that he broke into my house. I mean, yeah, it's a decent reaction to have, I guess.
Yeah, no shit.
My friend just broke into my house the other day. No big deal. Okay. I could hear him walking around downstairs as I waited for him to come into my bedroom. I grabbed my phone again. Aren't you gonna come upstairs? I can hear you walking around downstairs. Just come up here already. I sent the message and waited for a response. I was starting to get a little annoyed, but after a minute of waiting, I got up from my bed and went into the doorway. I proceeded to shout downstairs, "Get your ass upstairs already, stop fucking around." I sat back on my bed as I began to hear him walk upstairs. Suddenly, my phone vibrated again. It was a text message from Ben.
You know I was fucking with you, right?
My heart dropped. I looked up in the doorway to see a killer smiling at me.
I remember listening to this one. This is very similar story to this one where you like don't know who's there.
Yeah,
this is what I mean. Like, I don't like when my friends like mess around with stuff like that. Like, oh, I'm right outside your window. I mean, kind of like you, of course.
It's terrifying. Don't do this. And honestly, like, most of these urban legends are so common, I guess. Like, everyone's heard some version of them, but they're still terrifying.
Yeah.
Especially because, like...
Like, the boogeyman. There's, like, always some version.
You won't believe. I used to live on the 6th floor when I was younger, and I read something like this, and I was just, like, staring out of my 6th floor balcony, like, oh, God, someone's out there. Someone's out there. Like...
I'll be honest. Like, if a killer's coming up to my floor, right? I live very high up in the sky. If someone's coming to my floor to kill me, at that point, it's either supernatural, right? And I'm just quickly emailing Ryan and Shane. Or I'm just going to let them kill me because that was some effort that they put in. Like, literally, they had to climb up so high, get through everything. So it's like, you know, you've earned this skill. You can have it.
That's true.
Okay, that reminds me of this Daniel Sloss joke where he is like, okay, here's the thing. In the US, right, you just shoot
people. Yeah.
Right, you can shoot them from across the street without ever having met them. It's a coward's job. But in the UK, you stab people.
Honestly, right? Just keep like a serrated knife.
That's honest work. Yeah. His joke was literally that, like, if I get stabbed to death, then that means at some point you wanted to kill me more than I wanted. So he's like, I am willing to take up to 40% of the blame.
A for effort.
My own death.
A for effort. That's all we're saying.
And all I could think of in that moment was Julius Caesar.
Oh no, bichara.
Literally, like, anytime someone comes, like, someone that we aren't expecting comes over to my house, immediately, like, I call my mom and I'm like, oh, are we, like, expecting somebody? And she's like, sorry, this construction above me. But yeah, and she just goes like, no, we're not expecting somebody. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Let me just get
and she's
my
like,
knife
oh, just
to
have a knife ready. Yeah, no, literally my mom just goes like, have a knife ready.
You should. Hey, I have like
and
a
I use the proper, like,
idea.
Like,
why not
kind
keep
of thing.
A knife holder like right next to your door?
We have a knife
so
holder.
It.
Okay, no, that's a bad idea. Because then
next
whoever walks in, they can have the knife right next.
I mean,
that's
yeah,
what I'm saying. In a home invasion situation, you're at a disadvantage there.
No. Yeah, there's a decent disadvantage.
If somebody
there.
Breaks
plus, like,
into your house.
Plus, you know, a lot of guests will be kind of concerned if you walk in and you see, like, a knife.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like, as if you can make the visits to your house as, you know, rare as possible, that's just another win, let's be honest.
I mean, it is rare right now.
No one likes guests. Yes, especially with COVID. Please stay at your house.
Please do.
Yeah.
Stay at your home so we can eventually not stay at home.
It'll be faster. Yeah. What will you get out of that one night out? Nothing. It's fine. Don't go.
Yeah.
Actually, you'll get COVID, but that's about it.
Yeah, that's just about to say.
Anyways, moving on. Let's move on to a shadow in the doorway. So this is this is terrifying. I don't even know. I've not even read this in its entirety because I want to be scared. Let's go. Yeah. Also, it was like 7 when I was checking these. And 7 is dark and that's scary. We don't want to read scary stories after 7.
Oh, God. Okay.
So, I love myths, urban legends, and paranormal stories, mysteries, phenomenon, etc. As a kid, I actively sought out books and articles on the topic, no matter how vaguely related. 20 years on, I still enjoy delving into the stories of the unknown. The difference being, 20 years ago, I didn't have access to the wonderful world of the internet. These days, I literally have a world full of myths, legends, and stories at my fingertips. And so I often indulge in long Googling sessions dedicated to absorbing as much information as I can. I'm intrigued by the unknown. It means that there are things yet to be discovered and mysteries to be solved. This could be like an unsolved intro, just saying.
Yeah, that's what I was just
yes,
thinking.
Good.
Good, very good.
BuzzFeed unsolved. Yeah.
It was during one of my many mystery binges, I came across the story of the Hat Man, a form of a shadow person. I stumbled across a legend of the shadow people completely by accident, clicking through random links on Wikipedia. But it was a related article about the Hat Man which piqued my interest greatly. It roused a long dormant memory from within the depths of my mind. The following is an account of my encounter with what I now believe to be the Hat Man. I don't recall how old I was, probably around 4 or 5, but it must have been quite late at night. My parents had retired for the night and the house was completely dark. The only source of light was a gentle wash of moonlight filtering through my thin curtains into my room. I was lying on top of the bunk bed my dad had made for us. The bottom bunk was occupied by my younger sister, who had been sleeping soundly for hours. It was nearly Christmas and I was laying awake, pondering the complexities of the world, something that has become a bit of a habit over the years. He was four, that's so cute. Sorry.
That is adorable.
Yeah. Although it was likely that the huge intricacies I was trying to figure out in my mind was something to do with how long it was until Christmas on that particular night. As I was staring at the ceiling, completely immersed in my own thoughts, I suddenly became aware of a feeling spreading through my body. A chill went up the back of my neck, making my hair stand on the end. If I had been close to falling asleep, I was wide awake now. I held my breath and lay stone still, straining to hear something which would give me a clue as to what it was that had put me on edge so suddenly. I heard nothing other than my sister's rhythmic deep breathing from the bed below. When I could hold my breath no longer, I let it go as quietly as I possibly could. I couldn't hear anything out of the ordinary, so after a few more minutes of laying as still as possible, I decided to roll to my side so I could see out of the bedroom door into the hallway. I did this in such a way that it would seem to anybody looking in on me as though I was rolling over in my sleep, just in case one of my parents came in and gave me an earful for not being asleep as I was supposed to be. As I completed my expert maneuver, I heard a noise in the hallway. It sounded like footsteps, which is a relief. It was just my dad checking in on something in the house, but as the footsteps drew nearer to my bedroom door, a wave of unease washed over me again. My dad was always very careful about being as quiet as possible when walking around after lights out, so as to not wake anyone. Listening to this particular set of footsteps, I wondered perhaps if this was my mom, as the perpetrator seemed to be making no attempts to mask their sounds. I pondered this curiosity as a figure emerged from the hallway and came to stop in the doorway of my bedroom. Once again, I found myself holding my breath, trying to be as still as possible. The figure stood in the doorway, breathing quite loudly. It was definitely a man, judging by the sound of the breathing. For a few moments, I relaxed, thinking that it was my dad after all. I started breathing again and closed my eyes, pretending to be asleep. But the sound of the breathing stayed in the doorway. I opened my eyes again and took in the image before me. My blood ran cold. My dad did not habitually linger in doorways. Also, my dad was nowhere near as nearly as tall as the man in the doorframe, nor did he wear or even own a wide-brimmed hat. I stayed as still as I could, hoping that the figure would not see that I was awake. With the monologue running through my mind, I was reminded of the line from the Christmas Carol, "He sees you when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake." I smiled to myself. The figure in the doorway was Santa Claus, and he was waiting for me to fall asleep. Of course, it made sense, being so close to Christmas. I closed my eyes once more, ready to fall asleep. Once more, I got that feeling of unease. The hairs on my neck stood on end once again. Something was not quite fitting about that conclusion. Santa doesn't wear a hat. Also, I was fairly certain that he was never depicted as tall and broad-shouldered. The figure in the doorway definitely did not look or feel very Santa-ish at all. My eyes shot open again. I needed to figure out who was standing in the doorway. Even with the light filtering in through the curtains, I could not make out any details of his figure. My eyes had adjusted fairly well to the darkness by now, and I could make out just about everything except this figure. But whoever was standing in the doorway was probably just a shadow. The only thing that told me that this was not a shadow was the heavy breathing accompanying the figure. Just as I felt that I could not lay still any longer, the shadowy figure took one last deep breath and receded from the doorway, seeming to melt away into nothingness. By this stage, a lot of kids would probably have cried out for their parents or at the very least thrown the covers over their heads. I did neither of those things. Instead, I laid there pondering the new mystery of the night, Christmas forgotten until I fell asleep. I remember asking both of my parents the next day whether they had spent any time looking in on my sister and me in the night before. They assured me every time that I probed them about it that they had not been anywhere near our bedroom the previous night. I guess after a while, I just sort of shrugged it off. It didn't appear to happen again at all. Even now and then, the memory would spring to mind, especially during the night time. However, I thought about it less and less as time went on, until I saw the picture accompanying the Wikipedia article of the Hat Man. Oh my god, I just got an advertisement. This is so sad. One second.
Oh, I love that.
I was so into it, and then suddenly Hannah was like, I got mad.
Yeah.
I was like, is that part of the...
is this all the bit?
Yeah. Okay, so until I saw the picture accompanying the Wikipedia article on the Hat Man, I'd almost forgotten it completely. To this day, I have no idea what it was. Whether it was one of my parents sleepwalking, somebody who wasn't meant to be in the house, a supernatural being or otherwise. But the picture of the Hat Man is almost exactly like what I remember standing in my doorway. I will post this on the, you know, post that we make for this particular episode. But yeah, like, that's terrifying. Imagine, like, being 4 or 5 years old and just like, oh yeah,
who
it's probably Santa
dude?
Claus. And then you're like, wait, no, not Santa Claus.
Yeah. No, I've kind of like, okay, the weird thing about the Hat Man, right? I've heard like different things. He's kind of like the guy, you know, that weird, creepy black and white sketch of this random dude where people are like, oh, I've seen this man in my dreams.
Yeah. He's, oh, that's terrifying. I'm sure I've seen that guy in my dreams of the beard. I'll post that as well.
I saw it after I saw the picture, so it doesn't really count for me. But the thing, but like, it, he has very, like, he looks familiar. That's the issue, right? And the thing with the Hat Man, right? I wouldn't be surprised if all of us at some point have, like, seen some sort of, like, semblance of him. It's just, it's odd. Like, in the, like, in your doorway, right there. It's, I hate hallways so much. I'm so glad I don't have hallways.
Also, y'all, I need a water break, right? So, Sunidhi's gonna read the next story for me, and she has a nice voice. So, I think you'll enjoy. Let's go.
Okay. Well, then, okay, so this story is called A Peculiar Kind of Madness. I'd always known that my great...
That sounds... Okay, I'm sorry. Just one thing. Sorry.
Yeah.
That sounds like a title that 7th grade Sunidhi would have come up with.
See,
a
that's too many big words.
Madness.
Peculiar, it's too many big...
Madness.
Please say madness. That's it. Yeah.
Or like 5th grade Tanvi.
Yeah,
oh my
that's
god, that's...
A
pe- that's
like
a diss
pretentious,
there.
Pretentious, yeah. Pretentious.
That's passive word. Aggression there.
There's always passive aggression. It's fine.
Yeah. I was very pretentious. I still am.
Yeah.
Even more so back then. Yeah.
Anyways, continue. I'd always known that my great-grandmother... I've already fucked up. I'd always known that my great-grandma was an orphan. But in late October of last year, she decided to tell me the truth about what happened to her family. We were visiting her for her birthday. It was a tradition in our household. A road trip we knew in the back of our mind we'd take only a few more times. She was turning 98. So that was just the cold hard truth of the matter. In my childhood, the journey to Central Iowa had been a fun and lighthearted affair, but now my brother and parents could only maintain strained politeness as we met up and hit the road together. Each of us knew that this trip might be our last. For several hours, we drove through vast open farm fields that stretched from horizon to horizon. My great-grandma's house was down a narrow dirt road, off a wide dirt road. As a city boy, it was more or less the most remote possible dwelling I could imagine. She was born there, had lived her entire life there, and would soon, well, you know. As we parked in an open, muddy rectangle and stepped out to stretch our legs, the constancy of the place surrounded me. Every single year of my life, this house and its land had been exactly the same. The sky was open blue, the earth was a sea of waving gold, and the wind was a smooth river of cool warmth. There was never anything to mar those three pillars of sensory experience except the house, the barn, a defunct old tractor, and the bell. The bell was a simple thing, raised high on an old metal crook. It sat out in the fields about a quarter mile from the house, serving as a measure of the wind. If a storm was coming, the bell was supposed to ring, a necessary precaution in tornado country. The only problem was, the bell and its crook had rusted over long ago. Every time I got out of the family van from age 5 to age 26, I glanced at the direction and felt a sense of unease as my gaze fell upon that decayed artifact. This time, at age 27, I looked over and saw that the bell had been scraped and polished clean of rust. It glinted in the sunlight, practically daring me to look at it. I followed my family inside while struggling with a feeling of dread that I couldn't articulate. Who had cleaned the bell? And why? I tried to stop thinking about it as we gathered in the kitchen and said our hellos. My great-grandma was making tea and shooed off our attempts to help. She was a frail woman for whom movement was difficult, but she'd never let that stop her. The Wi-Fi password is on a note in the living room, she told us with an unquestionable authority. Go stare at your phones and the tea will be ready.
I love that so much.
Yeah, I know. My brother and I did as we were told, but my parents turned on the television instead of looking at the phones. For a few minutes, we stayed in our separate worlds, only returning to the present when my great-grandma brought in and we had a nice time. That night, when everyone else was long asleep, I happened to open my eyes and see a glow under the door of the guest room I shared with my brother. My parents were in a different room and would not see the same light, so it was up to me to investigate. Quietly, so as not to wake him, I crept out and down, finding my great-grandma still awake. She sat in her big jade leather chair, her gaze on the television. She asked me without looking my way, "You don't fall for this stuff, do you?" "What? Like ads?" She pointed her thin little arm at the nearby couch. "Sit." I sat. "I'm going to tell you a family secret," she said softly, finally looking my direction. "It's for you and possibly for your brother, but not your parents. Do you understand?" I didn't. Not fully. But I nodded anyway.
Sorry to interrupt, but this is exactly like Tanvi's dream. Like this line.
Wait,
this
what?
Particular sentence. Is like that one dream Tanvi had where her grandfather had told her that, oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that. I was literally just thinking about
that. Do you understand?
Yeah.
I didn't, not fully, but I nodded anyway.
Yes. That's like a more Sunidhi thing, I'd say, but nice.
Yeah. I have way too many stickers of me saying that.
Yeah. Let's go.
You know, I was an orphan for a time. Born in this house, live with my family, but then raised by an uncle after it happened. She didn't wait for my nod. I was 10 years old that night. It was my birthday. My mother had gotten me a small cake about the size of your fist. I look forward to that cake every year since we didn't exactly have sweets bounding about back then. It was 11 cents, so rather expensive. But my mother got one for every one of us on our birthdays, no matter what she had to scrimp or save. All year long, I saw Mary get her cake in January, Arthur get his cake in March, Eleanor in June, Clarence in July, then Ruth a week after Clarence. Then it was months and months until me, the odd one out on October 29th. I was so excited for that cake. As the days rolled closer, as the morning dawned, as the hours inched by, I hopped around the house like a bunny rabbit. But I wasn't allowed to eat it until... well, after supper. Suffer, sure.
That's ominous.
I stared at the clock, so I know. Yes, that one on the mantle there. The brass and chrome one. Same one. But I stared at the clock, so I know. Night fell at 6:41. That was the moment bright orange stopped glinting off that clock and my mother rose to light a lamp. I looked up at her. Now? She smiled and shook her head. My brothers and sisters complained in a chorus in support of me, but she just shook her head at them. Too soon, and she'll ruin her supper. Father came in from the fields not long after that, dirty and tired as all get out. He ate in silence while we chattered endlessly about what type of cake it would be. Under the frosting, who knew? It might be raspberry, vanilla, or even chocolate. We grew silent as Father neared the cleaning of his plate, an event which would mark the end of supper. 4 pieces of meat and bread remained, then 3, then 2. Any moment now. He stopped at the last piece, holding it unmoving above the remaining dollop of gravy. We turned our heads. It was the bell. The bell was ringing out in the fields. Father grunted, then put the last piece of his food back on his plate before rising. He opened the front door. We braced ourselves for the wind, but none came. We spat on and held up a finger to the night air, then shook his head. He moved back into our lamplight and sat. Arthur asked, "Is it gonna storm?" Mary asked, "Is it gonna be a tornado?" My mother shook her head, smiled at us, and told us not to worry. No wind meant no storm. But that bell kept ringing. My father dipped his last piece of food in the gravy and prepared to eat it despite the constantly ringing bell, but then sighed and put it back down. He motioned to Clarence. Clarence was the oldest, so he understood. He was nearly a man himself, and tying the bell would be no problem. He grabbed a candle, protected the flame with his hand, and headed out the open front door. My brothers and sisters and I piled up to the window, opening it. We found nothing but absolutely still, chilly air. We watched this little spot of light move out around the house and into the fields in the direction of the bell. The clanging metallic sound stopped, finally, and the candle's low flame hovered next to it for a solid minute. "Why is he taking so long to tie it?" Ruth asked. Eleanor suggested, "Maybe he's having trouble making a knot. Knots are tough." We watched for another minute or two before, and I know how this sounds. The little flame in the distance began to rise. Slowly, smoothly, straight up. We followed it with our eyes, exclaiming the entire time as it moved out of sight beyond the roof overhead. The bell began ringing again. "His knot must have come loose," Arthur said. Our parents came to look at our insistence, but there was nothing to see by them. Father motioned to Arthur. Happy to help out, Arthur grabbed a full lamp rather than a candle. He hurried out to the front door, around the house, and into the fields while we watched from the window. The lamp was easier to see, and we were absolutely certain he reached the crook. As the lamplight hovered there, the bell stopped ringing. At that point, we had no reason to think anything was amiss. Maybe the wind had just blown a wisp of burning candle string up into the sky, and Clarence had gotten lost in the dark. He would see the lamplight find Arthur, and they would both come back. The rising little flame we'd seen had just been a fluke. Only problem was, staring out into the autumn night, we still felt no wind at all. We stared at that unmoving light for a strangely long period of time. What was he doing out there? Was he calling for his brother? Why wouldn't we hear him, if so? Our parents looked away for a moment, and in that instant, the lamp went out. We children bleated, but by the time they glanced back, there was nothing to see. There was only darkness. The bell began ringing again. My father began grumbling, but there was no more sons to send outside. He narrowed his eyes with thought, then handed Ruth, the oldest girl among us, our main lamp. Our mother laughed. "Ruth, be a dear and go find your silly brothers." Ruth was a little hesitant, but she accepted the lamp. Leaving us in the darkness without it, she headed out around the house and into the fields. This lamp was brighter, and we could actually see her carrying hand and her white pajamas in a small lit halo. On the way there, she regularly called, "Clarence, Arthur, you two lost?" About halfway to where the other two lights had stopped, her calls went instantly silent mid-sentence. "Clarence, Arthur." It wasn't that she'd given up yelling. The sound reaching us had simply stopped completely. We could still see her carrying the lamp, still see her hand and pajamas, still see her turning this way and that. She even raised the house lamp near her face, and we saw her shouting into the darkness. We just didn't hear anything, nothing except that constantly clanging bell, growing faster in pace and louder in urgency. Mary, Eleanor, and I looked up at our parents with fearful gazes. My father shook his head, speaking for the first time that night.
"So there's wind out there, after all. The air is like a river inside an ocean. It's moving fast out there, carrying her voice away. But we can't feel it here."
My mother seemed worried, but she nodded and accepted that. So we gulped and believed it too. We all glued our eyes to that open window. Ruth reached the bell, and in that stronger light, it entered our view, unmoving at the exact same time we heard it stop ringing. Ruth looked this way and that, clearly concerned. She seemed to silently yell a time or two before moving closer to the motionless bell. A half-tied rope hung from the crook, an indication that someone had attempted to tie it, but we couldn't see Clarence or Arthur anywhere near her. She put the lamp down on the ground to free her hands for tying the rope the rest of the way, but that mostly hid the light among the low-lying recently harvested stalks. We waited, breaths held. The air held in my lungs started to burn. At long last, we were forced to breathe again. Ruth's light continued to sit there, barely visible between the broken plants. "What's taking so long?" Mary asked. Eleanor said, "I hope she's all right." Father told us, "She's fine. Damn kids are just playing a game with us." Our mother nodded in agreement. "Eleanor, go fetch your sister, will you?" Eleanor shook her head. "No way, it's scary out there."
Are they stupid? Are they stupid? How many children are they going to send? This is just, I'm telling you, you know what this reminds me of?
Why?
You know what I think? This is homicide. The parents know the children are dying.
Oh god.
They're doing this on purpose. They don't have money. They don't have money. She was just talking about how her parents can't afford the 11 cent cakes, right?
Mm.
They're doing it on purpose. It's homicide, I'm telling you.
Damn.
They probably keep sending their children out and they keep dying. Khud jana. Go and look for them yourself. That's what my parents would have done. They would have gone themselves instead of sending all their kids out.
Yeah, fair. No, actually, yeah, they're just sending each of the kids out one by one.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. There's something fishy here. I don't trust the parent.
Neither do I. The dad talks too less to, you know, be trustworthy.
Yeah. Eleanor shook her head. No way, it's scary out there.
It's just a game. You're not playing a game with us too, are you?
No, Eleanor gulped.
Then go get your sister and brothers. Tell them to come back in.
It was pitch black out there, and almost the same inside with us, save for one lone candle. Trembling, Eleanor took our last candle and crept out into the night, scooting along the side of the house to stay as close to us as possible. Shakily, she called, Ruth, Arthur, Clarence, this isn't funny anymore. Now it was we who sat in the dark. As Eleanor began to move further, away with the last of our light, we tensed. Father eyed the open front door and Mother softly moved to close and latch it. I wondered what they meant by that move, because how were the others supposed to get back in?
Oh, you might be just right. You might just be right.
Yeah. I told you.
Yeah.
Fuckers. Sorry, continue. Yeah.
But I suppose they'd unlatch it if anyone came back and knocked. Mother moved away from us in search of more candles. Through it all, the bell kept ringing out in the dark. Increasingly scared, I held Mary's hand tightly and yelled out the window, Be careful, Ellie! She must have happened to cross that invisible silent threshold at that moment because she turned around in surprise and stepped closer. I heard your voice go quiet, but there's no wind. Papa's wrong. She stepped away again. See, when I pass this point, my... She held up the candle to show us that her mouth was still moving, but we heard nothing. Come to think of it, her hair wasn't moving, and we hadn't seen Ruth's pajamas billowing in any wind. I asked Father, What's doing that? What's making it quiet out there?
It's just a game, Father insisted. They're all lying. She's just pretending to make noise so it looks like she's being silent.
Such an ass.
I swear to God.
Eleanor reached the bell. Father's grip on my shoulder squeezed to nearly painful. She reached down for the lamp Ruth had left. Lifting it with one hand and holding the candle with the other, she approached the clanging bell. See? Mary whispered to Father. The candle's not going out even though she's not protecting the flame. There's no wind out there.
But the bell is ringing, he said, gruffly. So there is wind.
Eleanor kept looking left and right, as if she'd heard something. Slowly, she reached the bell, which was hanging unmoving from the crook. But we could still hear it ringing. Next to me, Mary began to cry.
It's a game, Father said angrily. It's just a game they're playing.
Eleanor threw the lamp at something in the darkness. We saw the lamp crash, shatter, and go dark, but heard nothing. She raced toward us, candle in hand, but the flame went out because of her haste. We waited to hear her approaching or screaming, but nothing followed. The bell continued to clang. We waited in terrified silence. Mother returned with a candle for each of us, and we sat vigil at the window. Nothing and no one moved. For hours, the bell clanged without wind. The night remained pitch black. The bell clanged and clanged and clanged, driving deeper into our ears with each passing minute. Near midnight, we broke. Father was beyond agitated. Mary, go find your brothers and sisters. No, she cried. I'm not going out there. Mother glared at her. You have to. The game has to stop. Urged on by both of them, Mary burst into tears and climbed out the window. Holding her small candle, she inched out into the fields. Her sobs went quiet as she paused that same point.
This is some human sacrifice shit. This is some human sacrifice shit, man.
Probably. Who knows?
I'm telling you.
Let's see.
The game has to stop. Yeah, it's human sacrifice. That's the game.
Her sobs went quiet as she paused that same point out in the darkness. Her flame reached the bell and the ringing stopped. Her flame snuffed out. We held our breaths. The bell began ringing again. Father clenched his fists.
Go. I turned and saw he was looking at me. I suddenly realized I was the only child left in the house, and I felt horribly alone. Everything in me shrieked against the thought of going out into that cursed night. No! My mother wavered in place, no longer adamantly in line with my father. She began to cry, too.
What are you doing? He demanded. It's just a game. There's nothing to be scared of.
She screamed and demanded, Why do you keep saying that? Why have I been helping you do this? He grabbed her and shouted in her face,
Because we haven't been sending our children to their deaths. That's not what's happening.
She pushed his hands away and ran for the window. Pushing past me, she tumbled out and ran screaming toward the still clanging bell. Not out of fear for father, but out of terror for her children. Arthur! Clarence! Ruth! Eleanor! Mary! For God's sake, where are you? He growled and leapt out after her, yelling,
We didn't kill them! Everything is fine!
They both continued shouting until they passed that point in the dark, and all went silent, except for the bell. Twice more, it stopped ringing, and twice more, it began again. In panic and terror beyond reason, I closed and latched the window and pushed all of the furniture against every entry to the house. I curled in a cupboard holding the last candle up to my face as it slowly melted its way down toward my fingers. I was alone. Somehow, I was alone. We'd all seen the danger and stared right at it as it happened, but one by one, they'd all gone out there anyway. I'd been surrounded by a full band of siblings my entire life, and now, I was completely and utterly alone in a house in the middle of nowhere. By the length of my candle, it was 3 in the
morning. I just have one thing to say about this. Worst birthday ever, right? We can just agree on that.
Bye. Suniti, continue. It's getting interesting. Yeah. It's getting interesting. Suniti, continue.
By the length of my candle, it was 3 in the morning when the knock came at the door. I trembled, but did not make a sound. The knock sounded again 40 beats later. It was louder this time. I shook, holding my candle tight. The third knock was more like a tremendous crash or kick, and I heard the door explode inward. 60 heartbeats of silence passed, and then the floorboards creaked. Something in me told me to put out my candle for fear of it being seen through the cracks in the cupboard, but I didn't care. Not darkness. I couldn't handle darkness. I would scream if I did, so I kept it lit. Slow, quiet steps moved through the house. However, it would seem to be pausing and listening at times. At others, they would rush forward to a random spot in sudden frenzy and then stop abruptly. 400 heartbeats after that, the bell began ringing again, but this time it rang from inside the house. It rang from the kitchen, it rang from near the bed, it rang outside my cupboard, clang, 10 feet away, clang, 5 feet away, clang, right up against the cupboard door. And then it opened.
I sat expectantly, my mouth and eyes wide, as I waited for my great-grandmother to continue. After a bit, I realized that was it. But what did you see? She shook her head. That's not the point. I'm here, so obviously I survived. And a young man like you doesn't need to know what horrors walk this world outside the paved cities of a man. I gulped and asked,
You're not just pulling my leg. This really happened?
Yes, her gaze went distant by the television light. But here's what I want to tell you, and here's what you should tell your brother. The thing that opened that cupboard door and stared at me from the dark, the thing that hoped to wait out my candle before coming out of dawn, had a bell tied to one of its teeth with a blood-soaked rag, such that it would clang when its mouth was opened for hunting. Somehow, someway, some heroic poor soul managed to tie a warning bell to that thing before they died. We heard that warning bell all night long, and yet my entire family walked out one by one. We didn't listen because we didn't want to listen. My father knew what he was doing halfway through, but he didn't want to accept what he'd already done, so he did even worse to continue living the lie. I narrowed my eyes.
What are you saying?
She grabbed my hand briefly. Fear will tell you to put your candle out, but your head will tell you to keep it lit. Don't give in to fear. You keep it lit, you get through this. Turning my head, I became aware of a sound in the distance. Is that the bell? I was so caught up, I didn't notice. How long has it been ringing? She clenched her fist and turned back to the television.
Oh my god! Ah! Oh, that was wild. Okay. It was a bit of that a long really one, but that was nice.
That was really
I liked that.
Yeah. I liked it.
It had history. It had like
I support
nice
it.
Elements. Enjoying.
It was well written. It was surprisingly well written.
But this wasn't an urban legend, of course. This was just a
yeah, no, we've strayed far from that.
Yeah, we strayed far. Do you want to go back? Okay, so we have the killer in the backseat. I think it's pretty self-explanatory, and I think everyone's heard it. But that's what we're doing, telling you stories. So let's go. A woman is driving home from a late meeting at work. Turning up the radio when a song comes on that she likes, she's carefree and starts to sing along. It starts to rain heavily and she sighs, putting on her wipers. After about 10 minutes, a car appears behind her and she thinks nothing more of it. Suddenly, the car following her flashes its lights and drives up close behind her car. Opening her window, she waves her hand, assuming they want to pass. Instead of passing, the car falls back. A little confused, the woman rolls her eyes and continues on her way. A few minutes later, the car flashes its lights again and comes up right to her bumper, almost crashing into her car. "Jackass," she shouts, speeding up again to get a little away from them. Getting a little annoyed now, she isn't surprised when the car comes right back up behind her, flashing their lights and beeping this time. The car gets very close and the woman starts to get worried. She pulls over to see if they pass, and instead of doing this, they pull up behind her. Panicking, she drives off fast with the hope of losing them. Only 5 minutes from home, she sighs, relieved that they've left her alone. All of a sudden, the car screeches up behind her and speeds next to her. She looks into the car and the man is signaling her to pull over. Thankfully, she gets to house just in time and without taking her stuff, she exits the car and runs inside, locking the door and immediately calls the police to tell them someone has followed her home. After hanging up, she peers out the window and sees a man getting out of his car. He starts to approach her car, slowly holding what she thought looked like a golf club. Puzzled, she goes to her front door and as she opens it, she sees the man dragging out a figure from the back seat of her car. At this moment, the police arrive and handcuff the intruder, taking an axe from the back of her car. It turns out that the car behind had seen the man raising his axe to kill her, and they were trying to warn her about this. Every time they flashed their lights, the figure lowered back into the seats. There are other various stakes on this tale, and they include, like, the woman sees that she needs petrol and pulls into a petrol station. The attendant sees a man in the back seat and tells her that there's a problem with her car and she needs to go inside. Like, there's so many of these, but it's terrifying. Like, oh
yeah,
God,
no,
the world is an unsafe place.
Oh, yeah. That's actually one of my irrational
Also, there's so many
like...
scary stories on cars. Just because you've told me you didn't like this, I'm going to go ahead and terrify you further. Let's go.
Yay.
Okay, so this one's called Tap, Tap, Tap.
Oh, fuck.
Katie and Joe had treated themselves to a lavish dinner for their first anniversary. They'd been friends since childhood and always found ways to keep themselves amused despite knowing each other for so long. Knowing that traffic was extremely likely on the normal route home, Joe decided to take the deserted long way home through a dense forested area. About half an hour later, the car slowed to a stop. Looking over at Joe, Katie knew he was being mischievous and gave him a stern look. "Come on, Joe, I want to go home. Don't you start," she scolded. "Oh, come on, there's nobody around," he grinned. He leant in for a kiss, but Katie pushed him away. "I don't think so. This may be our anniversary, but I'm not about to get it on in your car," she laughed. "Oh, fine, but you owe me," he asked jokingly. Turning the ignition to awaken the car once more, Joe looked puzzled when nothing happened. He turned it again, but still, nothing. Rolling her eyes, Katie said, "Come on, this has been done to death. Get on with it." "Seriously, it just won't start," Joe replied, demonstrating again that the car wasn't responding. They were stranded in the middle of a wood with nowhere to go. Both checked their phones, Joe's was dead and Katie's had no signal. After what seemed like an age, Joe declared that he was going to go find the nearest petrol station or public phone. Getting her coat ready to go with him, Katie nodded. "No, you stay here and warm up the car," he said. "Are you sure?" she asked. "I'll be fine. I'm pretty sure there's a station about 30 minutes away," he reassured her. Agreeing to stay with the car, Katie lightly kissed her boyfriend on the lips and settled into the back seat of the car. Slightly tired, she decided to have a nap while Joe was gone. Tap, tap, tap. The distinct sound of tapping woke Katie up from her nap. Looking at her watch, she discovered that she'd been sleeping for over 3 hours. Puzzled that it had been so long without Joe returning, she peered out of the window. It was night time and the density of the trees made it hard to see anything. Worried, she climbed into the front seat and tried the ignition one more time, a fruitless attempt she knew but had wanting to give it at least one try. She played a game on her phone for a little while, having forgotten about how she'd been woken. About 10 minutes after she began playing, the tapping returned. Tap, 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 it went. Not knowing what could be making the noise puzzled her. Shining her phone out of the window, she saw that they were not parked underneath a tree despite the area they were in. The tapping noise came and went every few minutes. Getting quite worried, she locked her doors and stopped using her phone. 20 minutes passed before any noise returned. This time, however, it was a scraping noise that she heard. This freaked her out. Lying down in the seat as low as she could, she closed her eyes and prayed for the noise to cease. Knowing that something was wrong with Joe didn't help ease her anxiety, and if he had made it to a station, he would have returned by now. It had been at least 5 hours since Joe had left, and about 2 enduring the strange noises around the car. She was trying to think of anything to get her mind off the situation. The noise started up again, but it was interrupted with flashing lights. The light filled the car, and Katie sighed in relief. Joe must have gotten help. "This is the police. Stay right where you are," a loud voice sounded through the air. Puzzled, Katie wondered what on earth was going on. Unlocking her door, she was greeted by a police officer looking pale. She looked around at the other officers and was immediately confused. They were all pointing guns right at her. "This must be some mistake. I've not done anything," she explained. "Just come with me. You're not in any trouble," the officer replied gently. Walking towards the cars with him, he added, "We're going to get you out of here, but whatever you do, don't look back towards the car." Annoyed by how he had said this, she, like any normal person, would have looked at the car. What she was greeted with made her want to throw up instantly on the muddy road. Right there on top of her boyfriend's car was a dirty man holding a bloody axe in one hand and her boyfriend's severed head in the other. The noise through the night was him tapping the roof with his axe.
Oh!
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oh god. That is all these car stories, man.
It was terrifying. Okay, now this is actually, I think, gonna be kind of fun because these are extremely short urban legends. The first one is the Lawless Inunaki Village. I'm so sorry if I pronounced that wrong, but yeah. If you stumble upon the entrance to the Inunaki village, you will be greeted by signs to stay away, warning, "The constitution and laws of Japan do not apply here." Sorry?
What?
Tanvi?
She didn't say anything.
What?
Tanvi?
Hi. Yeah, what?
Hello? Yeah, she didn't say anything.
What? I definitely heard her say something. That's so weird.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Earlier I'd asked if we are doing the Red Room, Bala.
Oh, I don't know. I just got like the thing, something you're saying. Ah, I was like, what? Okay, let's just go ahead. Sitting in the countryside of
Kyushu, Fukuoka,
this abandoned village is only accessible through a tunnel which hundreds of workers were killed in when it collapsed during its construction. This village was slowly abandoned for reasons that aren't entirely clear. Some say that it was because of a widespread plague that wiped out the population. Others say it was just due to its remoteness. But the wildest story is one of those villagers went crazy and murdered everyone with an axe. Whatever the case, no one has actually lived here since the end of World War II, and the electronic devices reportedly just don't work inside. Are those the sounds of barking dogs or the screams of the dead workers that you hear coming from the tunnel? Dun dun dun. So yeah, Haunted ghost town, pretty nice. The next one is actually terrifying, and I think all of us would have heard of this. This is called the doll that grows human hair. Back in 1918, a 17-year-old boy in Hokkaido brought a doll from the market for his 2-year-old sister, Okiku. The doll looked similar to her as they both had an okapa haircut. I'm not sure how to explain this, but like bangs and like long hair behind, I guess. She loved the doll so much that she took it everywhere with her, even to sleep. When Okiku died a few months later, the family named the doll after her and prayed to it at their household shrine. It wasn't long after they started noticing something very strange happening. The doll's hair was gradually growing longer. Even after cutting it, the hair kept growing back. It was at that moment that the family knew they messed up. Okiku's father gave the doll to Manenji Temple in Iwamizawa City, Hokkaido, where it can be visited to this day. No photos allowed though. Scientists have analyzed the hair of the doll and concluded it was real human hair from a child. The remoteness of the temple makes it extremely hard to access without a car, and even then it can be dangerous when there's heavy snowfall. Some ghost tours do take visits here, but they are typically only in Japanese. In case you were thinking about going to see this demonic doll for yourself, you know.
Jeez.
That's actually scary. Like, you've confirmed it's human hair and it's growing longer? What?
Yeah.
Okay, the Red Room. This modern scary story comes in form of a computer pop-up, and it originated in the 1990s when personal computers were just starting to boom across the world. This curse starts with a pop-up that appears on a victim's computer screen when they are alone in a room. It's a red background with black letters asking, "Do you like the Red Room?" And it's impossible to close out of the pop-up. It's frozen on the screen. You won't be able to escape the room you're in when this pop-up appears, and the doors and windows will suddenly lock. Your body will be discovered days later, dead in your room, surrounded by walls painted red with your blood. The Red Room curse became popular in the dark corners of the internet after a 12-year-old girl was murdered by her classmate. The murderer, who has remained unnamed due to being 11 years old at the time, was found to have a link to a Red Room bookmarked on her computer.
Oh my god.
Jesus. Yes.
Wow.
Then...
How does an 11-year-old brutally murder a classmate?
Bro, I don't even know.
11.
Next, we have the Japanese Bloody Mary. The Bloody Mary of Japanese elementary schools is Toire no Hanako-san, or Hanako of the Toilet. Oh, this is like the, what's her name? The one in the Harry Potter one. I can't say what's her name. You know the one in the toilet? One second.
I mean, I don't know about it, but I think I know, like, the story.
Yeah. What's her name? One second. Oh, Morning Myrtle, yes. It's like Morning Myrtle, okay. Okay, so this is a spirit that can be summoned, but you'd have to be either really brave or just very scary. Hanako-san's true backstory is unclear. Some say she was a victim of an air raid during World War II, who was hiding in a bathroom stall when her school went up in flames. Others say she ran into the bathroom to hide from her murderous parents. One thing is clear, she died in the third stall of the third floor bathroom, and that's where you need to knock to summon her. Knock three times and ask, "Hanako-san, are you there?" "Yes, I am," a small voice will respond. The door will slowly open and you'll be able to glimpse a schoolgirl covered in blood coming out of the toilet before she drags you in with her.
Jesus. Why would you do that? Why? 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 Like, why?
Why not?
God.
Anyways, yeah, Japanese urban legends are terrifying.
They really are.
And I suspect these aren't even, like, the very scary ones.
Yes. This has been traumatic. Oh, God.
Wait, but, like, I wasn't sure about... Okay, wait. I'm gonna be completely honest. So, the last one, the one in the toilet, like... I have a small question regarding that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that spirit ghost thing thinks water is wet?
I mean, she was scared around World War II,
she literally
II,
fucking
right?
lives so- in a toilet.